Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
My opinion, I enjoyed watching his career from college when he played at SMU all the way up to the pros, and a fantastic person. So I want to welcome the program, Hall of Famer, NFL legend, Eric Dickerson. Eric, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing? Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. And Eric, I tell you what, when we talk about looking back to what you were able to accomplish in your college career and NFL career, it just must feel so special to know what you were able to do on the field.
Yes, I mean it does. I mean sometimes it seems like a life that never happened. It went by so fast. I still can't believe that it was me doing it. You know, when I look at even some of the old clips a couple of years ago, my oldest daughter, she didn't remember me playing because she was a little girl when I was playing. She was really 2 years old. And so she said, "Dad," she said, "people say how good you are." She said, "Do you have any old tapes?" So I said, "Yeah, I got some old tapes." So I stuck it. I seen it at the VCR. I think how long ago it was. I stuck the VCR in. She said, we sitting there watching it together. And after she said, "Wow, Dad, you were really good." I said, "Yeah, your dad could play a little bit." So it just seemed like a life almost had never happened. But I thank God for it.
Did you ever think, Eric, when you were like a teenager, that you would end up being an NFL Hall of Famer?
Absolutely not. No, not at all. First of all, I didn't know what the Hall of Fame was. I found out what the Hall of Fame was at the Pro Bowl. Ricky Jackson told me. And it was funny because he said, "If you keep playing like you're playing, you're going to get in the Hall of Fame." And I didn't say anything. And I said, "Ricky, I think I got to ask you a question, man." Because I thought he was going to explain what the Hall of Fame was. He said, "What?" I said, "Man, what's the Hall of Fame?" He said, "You don't know what the Hall of Fame is?" I said, "No." He said, "That's a place where they have the greatest players that ever played the sport. They have like a bus of them." I said, like a bus, like a school bus?" He said, "No, boy, not a school bus." He said, "A bus, like a big head." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So he explained that to me, and I just feel very fortunate and very blessed to even have played the National Football League and to accomplish the things that I was able to accomplish. And I tell these young guys all the time that, you know, it's a blessing to wear that uniform, no matter what uniform you wear, because you only wear it for a short amount of time. I mean, you really do. When you think about the big scheme of things, you play sports for a very small amount of time in your life.
You definitely do, Eric, and that career is a platform to help others and do so many great things of what you're able to do. And I guess growing up, did you always want to be a football player?
Yes. I mean, I love playing. I didn't ever think about playing professional football, to be honest with you, but I love playing football. You know, growing up in the state of Texas, the great state of Texas, that's football country. So I grew up in a football town, Sealy, Texas, a little small town, right off the I-10. And, you know, to play football was everything back in those days, and I did want to play high school football. I didn't think about playing college football. I was, you know, just blessed. I keep saying it. I was a blessed athlete, a blessed kid to be able to play at SMU or any university at that point, because I didn't think about going to college and to play football until – really, my junior year came around, and a lot of recruits started coming around my high school.
and then you said, "Oh wow, I'm going to continue to play." And your experience at SMU on the field must have been tremendous, especially your career in college. And I remember you playing at SMU, and you were pretty tough. I think you did take a Pitt out, if I'm right, for sure. Because again, my flagship, yeah. you really made Marino look bad that day, didn't you?
We had a great team. We really did. I mean, I give praise to our football team. We had a lot of talent on that team, and they had a lot of talent on that Pitt team also. But we beat them in the bowl game, the Cotton Bowl. We just had a lot of guys on that team that were first-round draft picks. Myself, we had Craig James, we had Harvey Armstrong, we had Michael Carter, we had Russell Carter. And all these guys, I think at least first-round picks. So, I mean, we had a lot of talent on that team. And, you know, to do the things that we did back then at SMU was just, it was phenomenal because, you know, we were like the new kid on the block, basically. And we were the small school, and we were beating and competing with all the big schools.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was just the biggest surprise in the world. And especially when you had you and Craig James in the backfield together. Wow. How could you stop that? It was impossible.
Yeah. You know, people always talk about, you know, the Pony Express backfield and stuff, but you know, the big thing with us was that our defense. I mean, we had a great defense. I mean, you couldn't run on them. They were very physical. And on top of that, they were very dirty also. I mean, I didn't like practicing against them because they were dirty. And they played us dirty. But we had a bunch of guys that really just loved to hit. And that was their big thing. I mean, they wanted to see who could knock who out. You know, they would, and I had to say it back in those days, we didn't have money to bet, but they would bet. You know, I'm going to knock so-and-so out. so we had a talented football team.
Definitely a talented football team, and then on to the NFL. And I'm sure you didn't think you'd break records and be able to do what you were able to do on another playing field, right? When you finished that at SMU and said, "I'm gonna go on to the pros," I know you wanted to really work hard, but did you think you were gonna have this kind of career?
No, I didn't. I didn't think about having, you know, the kind of career that I had, especially my first year. I mean, me and my best friend, I mean, we talked, and he said, We kind of agreed. He said, well, you know, I think we looked at Marcus Allen's first year as a rookie. I think Marcus had like 1,200 yards or something like that. And I don't know how many touchdowns. And he said, man, you could do that. He said, man, if you get like, you know, maybe 1,000 yards and, you know, maybe like, you know, 10 touchdowns, 9 or 10 touchdowns, that would be a great rookie season. Now, I agreed. I'm like, yeah, that would be a great season. Well, my rookie season had 1,800 yards rushing and 1,808 and 20 touchdowns, I think. 18 rushing and 22 receiving. So I surpassed, you know, whatever my thoughts were as a player. And let me tell you, my first 2 years in the NFL, I really, really loved playing football. I mean, I loved it to death. I think it comes to a point where you really find out what the ugly side of business is, of sports. And that's I hate to say it, that's what kind of tainted it for me. I mean, I saw it as a business because I'd seen how they treated players and then did things in the business world of sports and cutting players. And it just gave me a bad taste, but I just didn't love it as much. I love playing the sport, but you saw what really went on in the world of the National Football League.
You definitely did. We're talking to Eric Dickerson, NFL Hall of Famer, and much, much more his career. And then, again, you get 2,000 yards, become part of the 2,000-yard rushing club. What an awesome feat that was as well.
Almost definitely. I mean, the guy that held that record, O.J. Simpson, he was my idol. He was a guy that I liked to watch play. I never wanted to wear anyone else's number. I wasn't that kind of guy that I wanted to, you know, wear a guy's number. I want to have my own identity, so that's why I came up with wearing number 29. I was 19 in college. I couldn't wear 29 in the pros and be a running back, so I wore 29. And I was a big O.J. fan. I met him my rookie year. I won't forget my senior in high school. I came out to visit SC. That was my recruiting visit, and I walked up to him and I told him that, you know, my name is Eric Dickerson and I played running back and I'm from CA, Texas. He said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "And one day I'd like to break your record." Man, I didn't know that was going to break. I just wanted to say something, you know, just make a comment to him. He said, "Really?" He said, "Well, good luck." I said, "Well, thank you." And, you know, lo and behold, you know, that came true. I did end up breaking his record in my second season.
And wow. And that's a wow, especially if he was your idol growing up watching play. What a tremendous feat. But when kind of bouncing back, when you talk about the business side of it and how, you know, you love playing the first 2 years, you kind of saw, I guess, when did you finally see the business side of it? This is a business, and that you got to have a business mentality. And sometimes it's not love playing the game anymore, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I really saw that in around my third season. I really did, because I've seen how they had cut players and treated players. And I asked him, I said, "Man, why they cut him?" He said, "Man, money." I'm like, "But he was such a good player for our team." You know, like, man, they don't tell him about that. It's about the money. And so, you know, you just see the ugly side of sports, and it's just truly an ugly side to it. I mean, people, I always say that the fans care more than the athletes usually. And they get into their team, and, you know, but, you know, this business, it really is business, and, you know, it's about dollars and cents. And my first year or two or three, I mean, I would have played football for free if they just paid my bills. That's how much I love that sport. I just love playing it. I enjoyed it. I was a kid, you know, I'm 22 years old. And I didn't know any better. You know, I was a naive kid coming out of a small town in Texas. But I love playing sport. I think it's still a great sport. I think they're just taking some steps to try to protect some of the players now that they didn't do when we played. And I think, you know, they're paying for some of it. A lot of us older players, we pay for not getting the private protection also.
Right, and that's something when you think about when you're talking about that head injuries and stuff. Do you think it's the right thing that's happening? That finally, I mean, you're looking at these things and saying, you know, we got to protect the players better than we did before.
Of course it is. I mean, when you look at the NFL, I mean, the life expectancy of an NFL player after he retires from football is about 54 years of age.
Wow,
which is, I mean, you finish playing when you. Pretty much, if you play a long career in your 30s, what, you're gonna live another 15 or 20 years? That's it. I mean, you expect to have a good life, you know, have kids, grandkids, and all that. But a lot of players are dying, and you know, having dementia and mental problems, and you know, I think it's sad that it had to get to this point that they have to get to, you know, sue and you know, to make them really acknowledge that we have a problem, and we had a problem many years ago. And they didn't acknowledge it until, I always say, Mike Webster was kind of the first focal point play for the Steelers. When you kind of saw something happen, a guy dying in his car, great center for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I was a Steelers fan. And then that kind of brought it to the focal point a little bit more. People were like, well, he's a football player. Why is he dying in his car? You know, doesn't he have a great pension? Our pension is horrible. Our union is horrible. So it just kind of put a light on everything, and then players start killing themselves. You know, Junior Seau, Dave Durson. Yes. I mean, so that just, you know, that just made it even a bigger light shining on it.
Yeah, because again, you said life is short for football, and life after, meaning your life, and that again, what you guys go through as gladiators, and you're the best sport in the world, in my opinion, and that it generates the most money. Think of college sports. It's college football,
oh, man.
And think of the NFL.
All football generates the most money of any sport. Think about it. When you go to a basketball game, what does a basketball arena hold?
17,000.
You go to a Alabama, Texas game, or SC game, and it's 100,000. That's 100,000 people. That's triple. That's more than triple. So I mean, and kids love football. I mean, and the NCAA to me is the biggest gangsters of all. I mean, making money off all these kids, and now the first thing now you get a scholarship. Oh, thank you for my $20,000 scholarship. But thank you. The hand goes hand in hand. You can't do one without the other. They could not play sports without the university and be on television, and they could not have the athlete without having a scholarship. So you need to give something to these college athletes. I believe it. I don't care if it's $200 a month, $300 a month.
Right.
I mean, as an athlete, you only have time to go to class and play sports. That's it. You got time for a job. And most of these kids, especially black kids, come from broken families. They have grandmother raised them, one parent. They don't have the money to do anything. You don't. You don't have money to do anything.
If you start paying them something, then the cheating will stop. You know how much rampant cheating is going on in the NCAA with boosters and everything.
The cheating will never stop. It will slow it down some. I don't think it'll ever stop. I mean, cheating has been going on around since before we played and after I played. I mean, it's always been there. And, you know, it kills me is how the NCAA picks and chooses who they want to put sanctions on. I mean, they would have never in a million years given Alabama, Oklahoma, University of Texas, SC, a death penalty under no circumstances. Notre Dame, they would have burned the NCAA down before that happened.
And it's a
joke to me. I mean, and it's just it's sad how they exploit the young athletes and the universities also.
And think about this when Penn State, if this would happen in another university, probably Penn State would have had the death penalty. For what happened with Sandusky and everything.
For what happened with Sandusky, most definitely. And to me, that is a heinous crime. I mean, I hate any kind of rape. I mean, I don't care what kind. I mean, I feel like they should be castrated. To take advantage of a young child, an athlete, you know, that's putting their trust in you as a mentor, and you betray them by doing this. Yeah, State University, I mean, they got off easy. I mean, they got off extremely easy. If that would have been, I think, if that had been, like, well, we know they did what they did to my school. But if that had been anything, any smaller universities, most definitely they'd have stripped them of anything they ever had. They'd have stripped them of their national championships and everything.
Absolutely. We're talking to Eric Dickerson, Hall of Famer, and we're talking a bunch of different things, and I'm enjoying the conversation for sure because we're just shooting the breeze, and definitely as a Pitt fan, when I hear about Penn State, hey, I'm going to bring that up for sure. But one of your greatest honors, for sure, is being inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So when it happened in 1999, how did that change the fun of the game and to finally being honored? How did that make you feel, for sure?
Well, that's a good question. I think it really puts a stamp of approval on your game, your life as a football player. It says that you were chosen to be one of the greatest players that has ever played this sport. That's what it says. And for me, it means a lot because, you know, I've always been, when I was a kid, I was, you know, big and tall and I was fast. And I've always heard it, you know, that I'm not running hard enough. You're not trying hard enough. You're loafing. And I just made it, and I'm not saying, it was a gift and a curse all at the same time. Because they said I made it look too easy. Well, it wasn't easy. Let me tell you that, for starters. But that was just my gift. Like I said, it was a gift and a curse at the same time. But for the Hall of Fame, you know, that day, for basically everyone there to cheer for you, because you think about it, as a player, you go to so many hostile environments. You know, they're throwing things. They're saying negative things about you, your family. And for that day, you know, everybody's on the same team. I mean, it's such a great honor. Matter of fact, I was in my office yesterday in my house, and I was looking at my Hall of Fame bus. I was showing it to a friend of mine. And I said, you know what? I said, this isn't for me. I said, I thank God I was able to get into the Hall of Fame. But I look forward to my kids can enjoy this one day. They can take their kids back and say, this is my dad. This is your grandfather, you know, and that will always be there, you know, as long as Earth is here, as far as we know, you know, they can always take it back, go back and look at, you know, their dad and my grandkids and look at it.
And thinking about the Hall of Fame, Eric, in so many ways, it's such a camaraderie. You have an alumni that you can really keep in touch with, those guys that have been inducted, and to really, especially during your time, and keep in touch with them and see how they're doing in so many ways. So that the fraternity,
It's not even the Hall of Fame, just football in general. Right. Any guy that played football, he could play for a year, he could play for 20 years. Anytime you put a uniform on, you become part of that alumni. It's like being like a military guy. If you ever got out there in the battle, you're still a part of the military. And it's the same thing in football. If you ever got on the field warming up or whatever, you know what it's like to get out there. If you ever played in a game or got hit, you know what it's like. So not just the Hall of Fame, but just being a football player, it is a big fraternity. And a Hall of Fame fraternity, it's a lot smaller, but it's still a fraternity. I mean, it's guys that, you know, you look forward to seeing every year. You know, some have passed on, you know, the voice of the Hall of Fame for many years. He just passed away, I think, 2 years ago, was Deacon Jones. I mean, I always look forward to seeing Deacon. I mean, Deacon was a very boisterous, opinionated person with the Hall of Fame, guys who shouldn't get in, guys who deserve to get in. I mean, you look forward to seeing Deacon. And, you know, I miss him, you know, this year, not being at the Hall of Fame, you know, seeing him with that deep voice, you know, and saying, all right, well, we're going to see who's going to cry, who's going to be the big crybaby. you just know how Deacon was. And, you know, he sadly missed, and many guys that have passed on, you know, that's inducted into the Hall of Fame that have played the sport and have since, you know, passed away.
We're talking again to Eric Dickerson. Eric, now thinking about life after football, was that hard for you? Was that hard finally when you hung it up to figure out what your career would be afterwards?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you're not sure what you want to do. I mean, back at that point, I retired. It wasn't a lot of things a guy could do. Maybe do some broadcasting, you know. I'm not a sports guy. I don't really like sports. I just like to play them. I don't like watching sports. So you could do that, or you have to try to get some kind of business ventures going, or something to keep you, you know, occupied, keep your mind still working. It was hard. I mean, I think it's a little bit easier in a sense, but still, you know, guys, you know, they still search for something that they want to do.
Going into the whole thing about giving back, you brought up a lot of times how humble you've been, you know, really honoring the game, understanding who you are, not looking at Eric Dickerson. I'm Eric Dickerson, looking at who made you and looking at these things. So tell us about why you started your foundation.
Well, my dad was, I always say, for him, if I could be half the man that my dad was, I'd be a good man. You know, just half that man, even a third of what he was. I mean, my dad was a good man. And a lot of us feel like our fathers are the best fathers, and I feel like I had the best one of all time. And he's always said, it's better to receive, it's better to give than receive. And he said, son, when you give, you know, give from your heart. Don't give begrudgingly. And I've always lived by those mottos of giving and helping people and doing what I can for my fellow man and my fellow brothers. And that's just been a big part of me. I just feel like that a person that doesn't want to give something is a selfish person. And I just like, as a player, I go back when I played football. And playing football, the greatest joy that I ever got out of playing football was not even playing the game, the sport. The greatest joy that I got out of sports was being able to give to my mother and my parents, my aunts, and the stuff that I could give them, a life that I could afford them what they've never seen. I remember when I told my mother I wanted to build her a house, she's like, Eric, you know how to be in the house. I'm an old lady. Well, she was my mother's my great great aunt. She adopted me and raised me, and that's why I carry the name Dickerson. And so she had to build me a house. I said, I want to. I think that time she was 80 years old, or like 78 years old. And I'm like, no. Nah. She said, no. Nah. I said, yes, my mom. I always wanted to build your house, and I always did want to. And I built a nice 3,000 square foot home in Texas, you know, my little hometown. And you know, I won't forget when I sent in the final payment to pay it off. It was only $120,000, you know. But it's, you know, back that time, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
Still is. And I said, Mom, the house is paid off. She said, I know. She said, that's the best sleep I ever had in this house. But for me, for giving back and giving to other people, like when I do my foundation, we do football camps here in Southern California. We've done for, this is my fourth year coming up at the military base down at Camp Pendleton. I kind of got involved that in a roundabout way through another player. He was in the military. His dad was in the military. He was a military kid and asked me about doing a football camp at Camp Pendleton. I said, well, yeah, I'll do it. I never done a football camp. And can I tell you, it was just so fulfilling to me to see the laughter with the kids, how much fun they were having. We have people come in, the mentor, like a mentoring program. We had police officers come in. We had the bomb squad come in, talk to them. And just, it was just a great day, my first year I did it. And after the camp was over, the last day, it was just a two-day camp. The kids came up there, probably about 10 of them. And they wanted to thank me for doing the camp. And they said, Mr. Dickerson, are you going to do the camp again next year? Because we really had a great time. And, I mean, I didn't plan on doing another one. And I what could I say? I said, yeah, I'm going to do it again. And all of them start cheering. So, you know, this will be our fourth year doing it. And, you know, as our men and women from the military, they're out there, you know, risking their lives and their families and their kids are back here at home. You know, we don't know what the kids go through. And one guy, he kind of broke it down. He said, Eric, he says, you just don't know what this means to my son. He said, to both of my boys, he says that they don't see anything like this. They don't get a chance to do anything like this. They're always on edge of when I'm coming back, when his dad coming home. He says, so this is like a day where they just can just be kids, really. Absolutely. Be kids, have fun, a free mind of just having a good time. And it just gives me just the greatest joy to do that, you know, for the military and their kids.
It, definitely. And so the premise is the football camp. Do you partner with any other organizations for your foundation as well to help?
No, I haven't done any. I mean, if anybody would love to help us, no problem. I mean, I raise the money solely, you know, mostly through donations. A lot of people I know, they donate to the camp and just help us with the camp. And that's really it. I mean, and that's how we've done it the last 4 years.
That's fantastic. So, I know one thing is staying in shape and being healthy is very, very important to you. And you're a spokesman for Rushmore Essentials, And tell us a little bit about Revive and Revitalize and how you utilize those in your daily routine and why you are a spokesman of this product.
Well, it's a product that's, I mean, it's a very good product if you ever tried it. I mean, they have some new products coming out. It's called Rebuild, Reshape, and Refocus. You know, it helps you to rebuild your body, reshape your body, and kind of refocus your mind. It's going to be out this spring. Oh, it's the spring now. It's really coming into the summer now, so it's already out. I think they're launching here in early May. And, I mean, the product is just a really good product. I mean, I still try to work out as much as I can. You know, I'm not at that age where I can run like I used to run. But, you know, it really helps me recover. You know, recover, and I'm not as stiff. You know, after I work out the next day, after taking, you know, the rebuild and especially the reshape program. I mean, the reshaping. I like that one the best. I mean, so like I say, it's helped me a lot. You know, being a 53-year-old man. I mean, when I was 23, I didn't need these kind of products, but I can say it's really helped me a lot.
And what you like about them is because, again, they're healthy as well. They're not going to, be something like some of these drinks out there. These are not energy drinks, and a lot, but it gives you energy for your body. So because you can, they're dangerous. Some of those drinks that are out there, and that you,
what
yeah,
you like, so, yeah. Some of those drinks with all the caffeine in them, and, you know, it's very dangerous. I mean, you can, it speaks at your heart rate. You know, this doesn't have a lot of sugar in it. All natural. It's a natural supplement. It's not just a drink, and I call it a supplement. It's just a drink. It's something you drink, and it helps you. Like it helps your metabolism. It helps you to really rebuild your body, and it gives me. I can say what it does for me. Now, everybody else is different. I don't know how to do you or do someone else, but for me, you know, it helps me to recover. I mean, it does help my recovery time. You know, cause I still like to try to go out and run a little bit. And you know, I noticed when I first started taking it, before I started taking it, you know, I was, you know, huffing and puffing. And then I noticed when I started taking it for about a month, you know, I wasn't as tired. I mean, I could recover pretty quick. I could just turn around and run again because I still like to try to run some sprints when I can. But that's my thing. When I go to gym and work out, I mean, I can work out and I don't feel as tired after I come out. I can do more reps. And that's what it's all about for me.
And it's something that if you can keep working out and have that energy, then you're going to continue to want to work out because the older you get or the more you're just like, you know, I just don't feel like going to the gym or I'm not having that energy afterwards. It's great to have something that tastes good. And again, the new three drinks that are coming out are gluten-free and non-GMO, which is huge because we've heard about what GMOs do. And again, gluten-free for people out there in certain dieting that need those things. So again, it's not something that it's helping you in the whole process. And I think that's key. And that's why you're a spokesman, because you see the product is a great product that's healthy.
I see the potential of this product. I believe in it. I believe it's a great product. I think it'll help a lot of people that try the product. You know, and my main thing is that, you know, if you can try it, you know, and see if you like it. I mean, it may work for you, it may not work for you, but I see it works for me, and I just tell anyone to really try it.
And that's fantastic. And basically, it's launching late May. So, again, we're May 1st. So when this airs, people, www.drinkree.com. You can find out more information on Rushmore Essentials. And from what I've heard from just talking to James Worthy and yourself, the product, you guys are in great shape still. You see, you don't want to put things that are unhealthy in your bodies. And they really are looking at a natural type of a drink that's going to keep you, give you that natural energy and keep you going in so many ways. And Eric, where can we find information on your foundation and more about you?
Go on my website, ericdickerson.org. ericdickersonfoundation.org. I'm sorry, ericdickersonfoundation.org. You need more information on the upcoming camp. We have a camp July 10th and 11th this year at Camp Pendleton.
All right. Well, fantastic. Do you have a Twitter? Eric, do you tweet at all that people can check you on Twitter?
At Eric Dickerson, yes, at Eric Dickerson. I'm not a big time Twitter, but I do tweet a little bit.
It's the new game to get out there and keep yourself, you know, going.
You have to try to keep yourself relevant.
Exactly. But you're always going to be relevant when you have that being. You can put on your title NFL Hall of Famer. you can't beat that. So thanks again, Eric, for being on the show, and best of luck to you, and thanks for taking the time to talk to me today.
All right, thank you for having me.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a minute. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor, and Twitter, Neil Haley, and I'm so excited to welcome the program. And again, having a celebrity like this is fantastic for sure. And we are kind of in that break mode. We might get the Spanish team on the line, but again, I've had an unbelievable time. But he's going ahead and staying up with me, so I want to welcome the program celebrity from the Discovery Channel's Game of Pawns, Justin Tranchita. Justin, thanks for calling, and how are you, man?
Oh, I'm good, man. I'm good. Late night tonight, but I'm a night owl, so I'll survive. How are you?
I'm a night owl, too, and I'll survive as well, Justin. So how old are you, by the way, just to see who's the if I'm just crazy at my age to still be staying up?
Are you asking me how old I am? Yeah. Do you want me to give you a real answer on that? Yeah. We'll just say... We'll say 29 in a few days.
Okay. I'm 41.
We'll say 29 in a few days.
See, I'm 40. I'm 41, so I'll just say it, you know, and I never sleep because I have 5 kids, so this is no big deal for me. It's just exciting, the whole drill thing, but I'm excited to talk to you, and we could be at one point getting back on the line with the Spanish media. I have no idea, but again, it is what it is. But tell us specifically enough the experience of being on Game of Pawns and how cool it was to be on, to be featured on Discovery Channel and having a show. Tell me about it.
It's been a real great experience. I mean, you know, one of my good pals, Scott Velvet, you know, it's his pawn shop, and since I was a little kid, you know, I've done music and TV and different stuff, and he said I need kind of a, you know, unusual or funny guy, kind of an idiot, you know, basically, on this show. Can you pull it off? And I said, well, I've been an idiot for all these years, you know, why not do it on TV? So it's been a lot of fun just hanging out with my buddies and getting filmed and being us on TV. It's been a lot of fun.
It definitely is. And tell us a little bit about what Game of Pawns means. And I saw it was Branson, Missouri. So it's definitely another country music capital next to, I guess, Nashville. Branson's the next place to go for country music, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's all different types in Branson. I mean, you know, definitely in the Bible Belt, if you want to say that. But the show takes like a cash cab look on a pawn show. So when the people come in, instead of us haggling back and forth on a price, they have to answer trivia questions to win more money. So it puts kind of a neat spin on it. I mean, we've bought everything from a DeLorean from Back to the Future to anything you can think of. Elvis's pistol, Elvis's driver's license, Pee Wee Herman dolls. I mean, there's all sorts of weird and crazy things we bought on the show. So, it's been a lot of fun. You never know what's going to come in. I mean, I don't know. Some days, you know, there's nothing cool, and then, you know, the next day someone's in with some sports memorabilia that you just, you know, want. So
people
it's
are
unusual in that way.
Exactly, and you know, it's the kind of thing where, you know, somehow we could figure out that, hey, I have something better than you have, right? And this is going to be worth more, and then the part of the show is all about, am I getting over on that person, right? It sounds like.
Right. Well, and you know, the other thing is, I mean, you know, and I come from an entertainment background, so that's how I got roped into this thing. I mean, my dad owns a coin shop, so, you know, which I tried to stay out of because it bored the hell out of me, but coming from an entertainment background and being brought on the show kind of as the funny guy, I got to learn, you know, a lot. I'm still learning. You know, we'll be filming again, and I'm sure I'll learn a few more things. But, you'd be surprised some of the things that are worth money, and some of the things that are, you know, you think are worth a ton, they're just worthless. You know, that's like what I learned by being a part of this so far.
It's definitely sounds like it. And once the experience ended, how did your life change in certain ways? I know you do movies. I know you're also are a musician. How did it change specifically of getting a show on Discovery Channel?
Well, I mean, you know, here's a funny story, and I was doing another show, and I told them about this. You know, when you start getting recognized by people, you're never ready for it. I mean, the first time it happens or the first few times, you know, it's cool, but it's weird. And so, you know, people will recognize you in the most unusual places. I was in a truck stop restroom in, like, you know, Colorado or something. And there's a, you know, I'm like 5'9" when I'm standing on my tippy toes, and there's this big guy staring at me, and I'm, I'm using the restroom, and he's just fixated. I mean, I'm thinking, man, am I going to get jumped or mugged in this restroom or what? And I go over to wash my hands, and this guy comes up to me, and he goes, "Hey, are you the guy with the bulldog from Game of Pawns?" And I was like, "Oh, thank God, I'm not going to get rolled," you know. And the funny thing about the story is, he pulled out his camera, and he says, "Hey, I want to take a pic." And I said, "Okay, whatever." And so you got me and him. But the funny thing is, in the middle of the camera, there's some poor schmuck using the restroom up against the wall. He got him in the picture. So that's floating all over Facebook somewhere. It's just, you know, you never get used to that. You know, it's bizarre. But what do you do?
I mean, exactly, Justin. And we're talking to celebrity Justin Tranchita from Game of Pawns and on the Discovery Channel. And it's such an interesting process once you get your deal and you're on reality television, and how life changes in specific ways. But for our listeners out there, I know you have a lot of other projects going on. We're definitely promoting the Game of Pawns. And what I'm going to do for you, especially tomorrow in Spain, is promote it for the Spanish audience to say, and then we'll have to kind of reach out, and I'll message you and say, "Hey, you want to go ahead and call into our conference call line if you're still up?" I'll text you and say, "Hey, man, are you up through these next 2 days that I'll be staying up late?" Because I'd love you to tell the Spanish audience about this as well. But Justin, tell us a little bit about some of the other projects, and I definitely want to have you on the show again because you're a pretty cool guy and easy to talk to and laid back. You're probably the first celebrity ever to be calling me this late at night, and they're not on the left coast. So we got to say we're really proud of you for that reason as well.
Well, you know what? I'm a singer, so you know I do the TV stuff and the movie stuff, but the singer, that's always been in me. And as singers, man, we're a different bird, you know, and we definitely stay up late. I'll throw my Twitter out to the listeners. It's at the singer Justin, at the singer Justin. So keep that in mind. But yeah, some of the projects I'm doing, I just filmed a really cool movie by H&W Films. Did it in Texas. It's a Western. I got to play like the evil guy, which is the first time I've played that role. I'm always kind of the funny, you know, nutcase. And it was really cool to kind of take a new look and be bad, you know, and not get in trouble for it. So the name of that film is Thicker Than Water, and I'm really excited about that. I got my new record coming out in the fall. The name of the record is This Is America, and actually I just dropped the first single. You can find it on YouTube, iTunes, Amazon, whatever. So those are two of the, you know, major things I'm undertaking right now. The record is like a full-time thing. Of course, the tour will be coming up this summer. And a new television show that we're going to shoot in the summer is another Branson show, but it's more of a sitcom called The Branson Family, and it's just about five, you know, friends that are, you know, nuts and, you know, trying to figure things out and make it a better town, but we always seem to screw everything up. So that's what I have on the radar right now. And there's another film I'm doing next week. It's a World War II pick, but God, it's late, and I can't remember the name right now. So
you have a lot going on, Justin, for sure. You definitely.
I got a lot going on, man. I was just out in L.A. With Adrian Ashley, she's producing a show called The Real Deal that I'm probably not going to be able to be a part of. I was going to be a part of that, but I just have so much going on. Great show with Eric Roberts, Dustin Diamond. And we went to this charity event with William Shatner last Saturday, and I tied one on pretty hard. And I guess I've been told, I tried to lay a big smooch on Winona Judd. Now, I can't confirm that.
Justin, wow.
I had a few too many, if you know what I mean. But it's been an interesting couple weeks, brother. That's for sure.
Well, then definitely, it seems like an interesting couple weeks. And then you finish up with a late night interview with me, and I'm like, oh, I'm counting the minutes. So I'm till bedtime for Bonzo for me. Especially, I'm gonna be up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Then very, very soon.
Yeah.
So it is what it is for tonight. But I guess I'll remember when the days and the bars close, and you have to go to bed for 3 or 4 minutes. Now, another thing going on with. I guess when you talked about another show in Branson, do you know where that's going to be picked up, where that's going to be heard, where that's going to be seen, the new Branson show, or you can't say yet?
Yeah, I can't really divulge that. There's a network that's interested and that's developing it right now, and that'll be an upcoming thing that I can put out probably within the month, but I don't want to get in trouble. But
no.
Going to be big. It's going to be a great show. I mean, it's just. Pretty exciting. Most people, when they think Branson, they think old people, they think, old time music, they think, this show's really going to, kind of tell what really is going on in town. And actually, there's a lot of young guys like me, a lot of up and coming people in the business. Michael Haygood's going to be on the show. He's got a theater here in town. His family, basically five knucklehead friends. Trying to make a living in the entertainment business in Branson, of all places, not L.A., not New York, not Nashville. I mean, we're talking Branson, Missouri. I mean, it's it's like five guys hopping into a clown car, It should be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, it seems like you're definitely looking forward to it, and it's something definitely all the different projects Justin's having, and it just seems like always another opportunity, and you're going to have to come back on the show when you let me know specifically enough about what is happening with your newest show, your music, all the different things. I know that your publicist sent me some stuff with the music. I'm going to definitely see if I can get the guys from Spain to play it during the live event as well, if they're allowed to play music, or I will play some music in between breaks from our interview. But you're doing a lot of awesome things, and still Game of Pawns is airing all over the world still, right? It's stopped in the
U.S. Yeah, man. We just debuted in Australia last week, debuted in New Zealand over the weekend, UK debuted last month, Taiwan. I mean, it's crazy. My Twitter, I'm getting, people from, it's great getting the fans from the U.S., and I love it, man. I love my American guys, but when you have people writing you from Taiwan and the Netherlands and Paris, France, and Germany, and Russia, and, Ukraine, and all, it's pretty crazy. Discovery Network is global. I mean, it is huge, and it's just funny to go into, millions and millions of homes and people to watch you and be entertained. And the other guys on the show are great. Brian and Scott are my pals on the show and in the real world. And, it's just been a really great time. It's been a real, chance to grow and try something new and exciting. And I'm really looking forward to filming the second season.
Oh, really? So I didn't even know about that. So there is going to be a second season of that too. Oh, you're just busy as can be, Justin.
I'm rocking and rolling, buddy. I mean, I'm saying, hey, you live one time, you got to get on it when you can. So, really just keep your feet pumping. I mean, it's a fast-paced world out there, and there's a lot going on, so
Okay, well.
So, yeah, I mean, all positive things. I can't really bitch, and I'm a full-time dad, so.
Oh, so exactly, and same with me and all the craziness. So, Justin, where can we find information on you, learn more about you, purchase your music, all the different things, and honestly, I'm going to text you the next couple of days and say, hey, I got 5 minutes, say hello to Spang, because, but honestly, I didn't, your publicist didn't know this. Guess what? You're going to be definitely live in London, and two or three stations I'm on in London. So you're getting your push for the show in the UK. I'm on in Jamaica and all over the world, but we have radio stations in London, Whaley, UK, and also. So there's some places definitely you're hitting in Europe.
They love me over there, man. I won the Exposure Music Award Best International Act in 2012. I love the UK. Those guys are great. If you want to reach me, the easiest way is Twitter at the singer Justin. It's real easy to remember, at the singer Justin, and that's the best way. As far as getting my music, the name of the single is "This Is America," and you can get it anywhere: Amazon, iTunes, Spotify, wherever. Hit me up on YouTube, Justin Franchitta. You can check out all my videos and all the goodies. But yeah, man, I'm glad you had me on.
You got a huge amount of exposure. Yeah. I get about 350,000 or 400,000 live. I mean, all the different syndications. So you're definitely getting some exposure. But I wanted you to do Spain. But hey, I got two more days left, Justin. So you keep.
I wanted to do Spain. I tell you why. I'm Italian, but I traced my family tree, and on my father's side, we were trained Chico, which is the weirdest name, but we were Spanish, man, and we came over to Italy. Like in the 1300s or something, and then settled there. So I'm actually, you know, the whitest Spaniard there's ever been. But
Well, what we're gonna do, Justin, is I'm gonna text you, and I'll just keep bugging you, and see if there's a spot open again to get you on at least for 5 minutes to say hello to the Spanish fans that were looking forward to talking to you. But I appreciate you got the whole world heard you tonight. But yeah, we want more than the world. We want Spain into Madrid. So we got two more days of this World Radio Challenge. Can you believe they're staying up for 76 straight hours? They're crazy.
Wow, that's nuts. Well, definitely get me back on, brother. I'm up for it. You let me know when, and I will try to squeeze that in my schedule for you.
All right. I hope you're not doing a lot of work at this time. You're probably at the bars, right, Justin?
No, I'm not at the bar tonight after that Shatner thing. I'm trying to dry out a little. I don't want to make Bill mad at me next time I...
Well, so it's bedtime for Bonzo and it's bedtime for me, but I don't know what time you'll be going to bed, Justin, but good talking to you, man.
All right, pal. Good deal. Stay in touch.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And when I talk about interviewing a super stealer, the memories I have of this guy, especially with the super stealers, anyone that was on the 1978 and 79 team, all are my favorite players of all time. And when I connected with him on LinkedIn, I said, I got to have him on the show. So I want to welcome the program. Craig Colquitt from the Super Pittsburgh Steelers, 1978 and 79 Super Bowl champ. Craig, how are you?
I'm doing great, Neil, and I appreciate this opportunity.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you specifically enough because that team, Craig, think about it. I mean, for Pittsburgh fans, they never forget any of those players for sure.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I like you said, I have the two rings from 13 and 14, and wherever I go, especially presentations, sales presentations or whatever, a speaking engagement, or airport restaurants, people see the rings. It's just opens the floodgate of conversation. It's a lot of fun.
It definitely opens up that floodgate anytime you're an NFL player, but especially when you have those rings, and if they're Pittsburgh Steelers fans, they remember those glory days because that was the time when really things were going well for Pittsburgh, and, I mean, back-to-back championships and just amazing teams and amazing stories on that team.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I'm finding statistically, 95% of the sports fans out there love the Steelers, and the other 5% hate them. So it's a lot of fun. Whether they hate it or not, it ends up being a good conversation.
And also, Craig, when we think about specifically enough the career and everything, it's interesting to know, again, people might not remember that your background's Tennessee. And so now you're back in Tennessee and stuff. So you specifically are back into, I guess, Titan country and different things like that. How do they kind of look at you, especially if they're Tennessee Titan fans, about a former Steeler?
Well, they at first they look at me out of the corner of their eye because they have blue blood down here and the Titan blood. So and then they kind of accept me because every time Pittsburgh's come in here and played at the Titan Stadium, you know, somebody's writing a book. I can't remember the former player's name. It's always a home field advantage or something like that, and 50% of the crowd here at the Titan Stadium is black and gold, so it's they hate it. It's a great atmosphere, though.
They can't stand when how many Steeler fans come out of the woodwork that now live in Nashville, that and then, you know, they think they have the biggest advantage, the Titans. You know, everyone's Titan fan, and then bam, Pittsburgh fans come out of the woodwork and you're like, well, what's happening? Even when the Titans were really good, there were tons of Steeler fans in that stadium, weren't there?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it's I went to a game a couple of years ago, and the tailgate was just—I couldn't believe it. The lady that put on the tailgate where I went, she operates the YMCA here. I mean, the Boys and Girls Club, and there were Steeler flags everywhere. It was—I ended up being a celebrity at the tailgate, so it was a lot of fun, but. The memories are great. I was going to be Dallas Cowboys told me the day before the draft that they were going to take me in the fifth round, and Pittsburgh took me in the third. And I was a little bit disappointed because everybody wanted to be a Cowboy.
Exactly,
I thought.
Yeah.
And then Joe Gordon, the PR director, calls me and he says, the first thing he says, what do you think about playing with people like Terry Bradshaw, Lynn Swann, Jack Lambert, Mike Webster? And he goes through these names, and I hadn't even thought of it that way. And I got a little bit emotional. I said, good grief, I may have a ring out of this.
So, Craig, one of the things we do a lot is we talk to NFL athletes about life after football. So when you decided to retire, did you have a career choice in mind, or were you pretty much going through your career choice while playing still?
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting conversation because I am putting together a book. I've been talking about it for years, but now that I'm in the business of cleaning schools, and it's taken a long time. Number one, I never finished college, and I walked on at the University of Tennessee when I was 20 years old, 2 years out of school. And by the time my career was over, I had a kid and couldn't go back to school. But it was very, very difficult because I didn't have a degree.
Yes.
And nobody talked to me, even though I had that background. Now, you know, I'm almost a god, you know, so they're interested in me. But I've been with the same company since 97, but from 1985 until really 1995, I struggled. I had jobs, but it was real estate. It was just stuff that, you know, just about anybody could do, but the education part really held me back.
And that you are a number, Craig, of how many NFL athletes after their career's over, regardless of the money they're making now to then when you guys weren't making that much money, that they just can't transition. And I've talked to so many of them, and they talk about, you know, think about the head injuries and things like that. You didn't have to deal with that as much being a punter. But it's amazing to hear these stories and think, why doesn't the NFL do a better job of life after? And athletes in general can't figure that out. So you had to struggle a lot, it sounds like, Craig, and I think that's going to be a great part of the book for sure is, you know, you're a super Steeler. You got those two Super Bowl rings. Not many people can walk around saying, look at my two Super Bowl rings. But then when your career was over, you pretty much said, what do I do next? And how could I do it? And I just can't find something I'm passionate about, sounds like.
Oh, yeah. It was a real struggle, and probably the biggest mistake I made was going back to Knoxville. And Jesus Christ himself said, a prophet is not accepted in his own hometown. And I'm not saying I'm a prophet, but we are treated different being former athletes.
Yes.
But I was just Craig Colquitt. You know, I was from Knoxville and University of Tennessee was everything. But whenever I went back to Pittsburgh, it was like, wow, here's Craig. He's got two rings. So I wish I'd stayed in Pittsburgh and taken advantage of probably one of the greatest towns in America to live in, if not the greatest. So, I loved the Nashville area, but Pittsburgh had a lot of opportunities I probably lost out on.
Well, absolutely. So, Craig, we talk about the struggles, but then also, I guess, you are, I guess, another one of those amazing athletes that has produced NFL kids. And that's, that again, you and it's kind of funny, the Tennessee connection. You know, you have your sons that play in the NFL, just like the Mannings. And it's a kind of a strange parallel in a way with punting versus quarterback. And so that must be an amazing thought process when you're going through all these difficulties, your kids took up what you enjoy and excelled in it as well. And so that must have made you proud during those hard times.
Oh, no question about it, because I was very careful not to live through them, but with them. And you know, every parent has to learn that, especially if they're, you know, they can perform at a high level. And the boys were incredibly good at soccer. I mean, from age 5 until high school, you know, they were being recruited in soccer, but there was nobody going to pay for it. Brown University wanted Dustin, that's at the Chiefs, but I had to pay for the first year, and that was $38,000 just for the academic side. And I said, Dustin, put on your soccer, your football cleats. Let's try something else.
So interesting. So he wasn't even looking at playing football then, it sounds like, Dustin.
He's an amazing story, really. He's left-footed, right-handed, runs a 4.4 40 at the time, and he's 6'3", 178-pound left striker. I mean, he could run over people. He was really, really good, but there was no future. So we tried this, the football thing, and right off the bat, I noticed he's holding the football with his right hand and passing it over to his left foot to kick it. And I said, Dustin, this is not going to work. You're going to have to use your left hand. And he says, Dad, I can't even pick my nose with my left hand. So his brother, Britton, came up with, why don't you learn to juggle? And he did, and he paid the price, and it's worked out really well for him. So for both of them. So I told them originally, I said, if this happens, you can go to any college in the country you want to, as long as it's Tennessee.
So that's amazing. So both of them, did they both go to Tennessee, Craig?
They both did, and Dustin had to walk on and then got a scholarship, and Britton was scholarship dry for that at Tennessee.
Oh my gosh! Oh wow! So and then
I couldn't pay for college. Yeah. I don't know what else. I was just going to have to take loans and everything. So it worked out real good.
So Craig, it seems like once the boys started to continue in their careers, your success off the field became better and better. Where you found your niche and your job. You said you went through those struggles. Then they kept playing. And do you think them playing at a higher level and competing gave you that competitive edge to want to be successful in life after football as well, at one point finally kind of not maturing, but really looking at, I found a career for myself?
No question about it. And what happened was my past was reignited. It became a good conversation, plus talking about the boys. So people were starting to listen to me, you know, in the public education world, which before, you know, it wasn't quite as melodramatic as it became. So my career did take off, and I did start to focus. But I was also able to be with them two or three times a week during practice for basically 9 years.
That's
so,
yeah.
Oh, it was great.
So you found that job and you found that opportunity. Now you want to write a book, and your story definitely is amazing. And I don't think one segment of 14 minutes is not going to be enough for sure, Craig. But I guess that seeing your boys' success on the field and now kind of tell us the job, because you were going to tell me specifically what you're currently doing and how you're going out with different schools across the country, and tell us about it.
Yeah, the name of our company is GCA Services, and we're based in our education division in Knoxville, Tennessee, and then the whole division is based in Cleveland, Ohio, and we're actually owned now by Blackstone out of New York. So we've got tremendous financials. We're about to hit the $1 billion mark in our business from 11 companies being put together since 1997. So fortunately,